He's a good, good father, and because he's a good father, we are loved by him. We're going to be in Philippians chapter 3 this morning, but before we go there, we are going to play a little word game. You guys like to play games? Okay, you guys like to play games in church? Are you guys nervous? I'm just kidding. So we're going to play a little word game. I'm going to say two words, and you tell me what comes to mind, so you guys can talk to me, okay? When I say the word status symbols, what comes to your mind? When you hear status symbols in life, what are some status symbols in life? Car. Yep. House. Money. So we got a car, we got a house, we got money. Job title. Yep. Career. Mm-hmm. Somebody in the back, you guys in the back are like sleeping on me. Vacation. Yes. How about when you see your friends on a really nice vacation on Facebook and you're like, come on, I want to go on that. You know what I mean? Okay. Anything else? Any other thoughts? Grandkids, yeah, that can be a status symbol. So we have all kinds of, you guys said all kinds of stuff. So we have a car, we have a house, we have career, we have grandkids, we have vacations. These are all good things. In fact, some of these are great things. But if you're like me, something slowly happens that I often don't realize. I begin to anchor my heart to certain good things and anchor my identity into them. Let me tell you what I mean. In the 1970s and 80s, there was an incredibly talented, hardworking tennis player by the name of Chris Evert. Anybody ever heard of Chris Evert? Okay, some of you guys. At the age of 20, she was the number one ranked tennis player in the world at 20 years old. She had the rare gift of having an extremely great work ethic. She had obviously incredible talent, but also her dad was a professional tennis coach. So she had the whole package, all these things put together. After having a very lucrative and successful career, she won every major tennis championship more than one time. Like all athletes, it came time for her to retire. And this is what she said about the thought of retirement. She said, "I had no idea who I was or what I could be away from tennis. I was depressed and afraid, because so much of my life had been defined." Let's say that word together. Ready? Defined. Let's say it one more time. Ready? Defined. So much of my life had been defined by my being a tennis champion. I was completely lost. Winning made me feel like I was somebody. It made me feel pretty. It was like being hooked on a drug. I needed the wins, the applause, in order to have my identity. Chris built her identity on something that wasn't bad, a career. That's a good thing. But because she built her identity on this, it caused her, in her words, to fall into depression. You may say, you're talking about identity. What do you mean by identity? Identity is this. Identity is how we define ourselves to ourselves and to other people. Identity is how we define ourselves to ourselves and to other people. So I have something up here. I have a book up here. Anybody want to guess what this is? Bible. That's a good answer because we're in church, but it's the wrong answer. I'm sorry. It is a dictionary. Okay. I had to go on a hunt to find one of these. This is like, I feel like it's like an antique or something. I thought about taking out my phone or my iPad and showing you the app, but I didn't think it'd have the quite same effect. But you have a dictionary. How many of you guys use the dictionary in school? I mean, a big one like this. Okay. Aren't you glad those days are done? You got to look up a word, and then you find the definition, and you have to write it down. But a dictionary has one purpose. Defines words. That's the purpose of it. When we were in school, we thought it was to terrorize us, okay? But we know that's not the purpose is to define words. I want to ask you a question that's very important this morning. And how you answer this question will determine not only the quality of your life, but the direction of your life. Nate, I don't even go to church. It doesn't matter if you go to church. It doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter how old you are. We hear political candidates all the time trying to define themselves to us. They're not only trying to define themselves, but they're trying to define everybody else to us. Now, we all know they're liars anyway, so that didn't really matter. But the truth of the matter is that we live in a world that tells us we are defined by what we do. We are defined by how successful we are in our career. We are defined by what we drive, by what our relationship status is. But Jesus frees us from this identity. And this morning, we're going to discover how. We're going to be in Philippians 3 this morning. If you want to look in your app or the Bible, we'll also have it up on the screens. But Philippians chapter 3 this morning, we're going to kind of walk through these verses. Philippians chapter 3, verse number 4, this is Paul writing. Paul says this, "Though I might also have confidence in the flesh, if any other man think that he hath, whereof he might trust in the flesh, I more." And now he starts defining himself. He says, "I was circumcised the eighth day." Paul's defining himself here by his religious pedigree. Paul says, "I was circumcised the eighth day. I grew up in church. I knew the law. Got Bible trivia right every single time. There was nobody better at Bible trivia than me. I was circumcised the eighth day." This is a religious definition. This is who I am. He says, "I'm of the stock of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin." Now, casual reading, we're like, what's the big deal? You're just saying where you're from. Well, Israel, there was 12 tribes. The tribe of Benjamin is significant because the first king of Israel, Saul, he came from the tribe of Benjamin. So what he's saying is he's saying, I just want you to know that not only am I a real, the stock of Israel, but I'm from the tribe of Israel. And you're casual reading through that. You're like, that's not a big deal. That's great. Your dad was a king or your whatever was a king. But in this day, that's a big deal. This doesn't have quite as much significance, but if I were to say something like, oh, I'm related to the president, I'm related to Barack Obama, multiply that times 100, and when these people read that, they're like, wow, he's of the tribe of Benjamin. He's a big deal. He goes on and says this. He says, "And Hebrew of the Hebrews, as touching the law, a Pharisee." When he says the word Pharisee, he's communicating how educated he is. Let's put this in today's vernacular. I graduated with my master's from Harvard, have a PhD from Stanford. This guy's just letting them know who he is. Hey, I'm a big deal. He goes on in verse number 6. Concerning zeal, persecuting the church. So now he's going to talk about all his achievements. He's going to talk about his performance. He's going to talk about everything he did. So he's defined himself by his religious background. He's defined himself by his family origin. He's defined himself by his education. But he's not done yet. He's got some more accolades he's going to shower on these people about how great of a guy he was. He says, concerning zeal, persecuting the church. This is what I did. This was my performance. I look at myself. I was zealous. I persecuted the church. Touching the righteousness which is in the law, blameless. He's saying, You see all the righteousness which is in the law? I did it all. I was blameless. You couldn't say, oh, well, I saw you do this. No, not Paul. He was a really, really good person. A whole lot better than me. But verse number 7 takes a weird twist. Verse 7 kind of, you ever read a book, or maybe you watched a movie, or you watched your favorite series, and you were expecting something to happen? You know, you're watching Netflix, you're sitting there, and then all of a sudden, something crazy happens. You're like, oh my goodness, where did that come from? And aren't those like almost the funnest? Because they have you at the edge of your seat and you're like, what's going to happen next? They're reading this. And it's like, but what things were gained to me, those I counted loss. Whoa. You counted those as a loss? You didn't think that was a big deal? Now you got to get the picture. The book of Philippians is written to the church at Philippi. It's written to a bunch of Jesus followers. So what happened is they got a letter from Paul, and they're reading it. Can you see the scene? They're in a small house. They don't got big houses there. They're in a small house. Maybe it's at night. Maybe it's a full moon. The stars are bright. They're all packed into this house because they're reading this letter from Paul, somebody that they loved, somebody that loved them. And they're reading this letter, and they're high-fiving each other like, yeah, Paul's got a PhD. Paul's related to the king. That he is the man. Aren't you glad that we know him? Then they get to verse 7 and they're like, whoa. He counted those things but loss? But then it gets very interesting in verse 8. Yea, doubtless I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung. Now, you don't have to be a PhD to figure out what that word means. And if you don't, it's a real deep word. It just means poop. I do count them, but poop. That's what it means. That's the word. That I may win Christ. Now, can you see the people? They're reading this, and they know that Paul's a scholar. They know he's really smart. He's got his PhD from Stanford, for crying out. He's got himself together, and maybe some people are like, wait, can you read that again? Did Paul really use that word? Can you see the teenage guys in the corner? They're like, did you hear what Paul said? The teenage girls are on the other side of the room saying, that's so nasty. Paul just said the word poop. Now there's something that I can... Paul, that's... And then the young adults on the other side are like, finally, Paul says something relevant that I understand. Can you get the picture? Like, he just listed all these things and was like, hey, you know what I think about them? I think they're dung. Paul might say such a thing because in light of the freedom that comes with being defined by Jesus, that word shows the futility of allowing anything else to define you, no matter how good it is. There are a few scriptures in the New Testament that are as relevant as today as Philippians chapter 3. We have the same issues they had. They're just culturally different. We all have a heart that's desperately wanting something to define us, and I'm speaking of me, define all of us as a success, as significant, as meaningful, as loved. And Paul allowed all these other things to define him because he thought that in those things he could find meaning, success, significance, and love. And then Paul discovered a greater definition. And he said, let me tell you what all those other lesser definitions are compared to that, what they look like. Today we're going to look at how we define ourselves. Why it's important what we define ourselves as. And then how God defines us. Notice number one, how we define ourselves. How we define ourselves. You know, like, what we usually do is we usually look at good things in our life. And we allow good things to define us. So Paul did. Religious upbringing, family lineage, education, performance. There's nothing wrong with those. Those are good things. Like, when you read the list, for the most part, you don't say, oh, that was a sin. You could say persecuting the church. Yeah, that wasn't a good idea. But what he was talking about there was his performance, about everything that he did. Those weren't bad things. And we often define ourselves by the list of the things that you guys said in the beginning of the message, don't we? By what we do for a living, by what our relationship status is, by our finances, by our grandkids, all the stuff that you guys said. We often define ourselves by good things. Now, in some scenarios, we define ourselves from some negative things, but for the most part, we look at the good things of our life and we allow our lives to be defined by the good things. This is why, after the 2008 economic collapse, the CEO of the leading real estate auction firm in the country, which was Sheldon Good, the CEO of that company was Stephen Good. He ended his life at 52 years old. He was the CEO of the biggest real estate company in the country. He had built his life under an identity of power, of success, of look what I can do. And what happened when it all crumbled? What happened when everything he built his identity on broke? He didn't know what to do, and he ended his life at 52 years old. This story reminds us, number two, of why it matters how we define ourselves. Why it matters how we define ourselves. Our identity, the things we use to define ourselves, can either fail us or be taken away from us. And then what do we do? What do we do when how we defined ourselves isn't where we thought it would be? You read about Matthew in the New Testament, the tax collector. He defined himself as a tax collector. He defined himself as somebody with notoriety. He was well known. He had a lucrative career. And he gave all that stuff up to follow Jesus, to take his next step and follow Christ. This is what we think. We think, oh, man, he, he was doing it because it was the right thing to do. Because he was a man of principle and he was tired of living in sin and he decided to follow Jesus. No, I think it was a little more than that. You see, when you read the New Testament, when people had an encounter with Jesus, they had a redefinition of life. They had a redefinition of their value system. They had a redefinition of their identity. All the things that used to define them in the light of who Jesus was didn't carry so much weight anymore. I tend to read the Bible probably like many of you. Maybe I'm the only one. But I tend to read the Bible through the lens of an obligatory, performance-based duty lens. Where I read the Bible, this is what I need to do. Oh, I'm not doing that. I need to do that. I haven't done that for a long time. I need to do that. And then what happens is we read the life of the disciples and we're like, oh, they gave up everything to follow Jesus. Jesus must have smiled down on them and said, I really like you. I really love you because you gave up fishing to follow me. We read the life of these disciples and we're like, I want to be like them. They sold everything. They gave up their entire lives to follow Jesus. I want to be like that. Look at everything they did. But the New Testament unfolds a little bit differently. The New Testament doesn't unfold as something that was done out of obligation or something that was done out of performance, or get this, something that was done because it's the right thing to do. It's a lot deeper than that. That's a very shallow view of the New Testament. These people came face to face with Jesus. These people came face to face with something that they had never experienced in their life, love. These people came face to face with somebody that defined them, that of somebody of significance, that accepted them, that said, you are valuable. And when it came down to, I can continue living my life the way it is, I can continue going through the motions, or I can follow somebody that genuinely loves me, that genuinely accepts me, that gives me value, that gives me true meaning, and allows me to rest. You know what it was? It was a no-brainer. It was, look at who Jesus is and look at my life. It wasn't like, I have to follow Jesus, I know I should do it, but I get it. No. It was, I get to. It wasn't I have to, it was I get to follow Christ, because they saw that Jesus gave them significance. They saw the meaning and the value that Jesus was giving them, and it was a no-brainer. Jesus offered Matthew acceptance. He offered Matthew grace. And when Matthew contrasted between being defined as a lucrative, well-known tax collector or being defined as somebody that has significance in life, somebody that has value, somebody that has loved, it was a no-brainer. Get this quote from Tim Keller. If we look to some created thing to give us meaning, hope, happiness, and identity, and only God himself can give, it will eventually fail to deliver or break our hearts. Can we let that sink in? That's good. If we look to some created thing to give us meaning, hope, happiness, and identity that only God himself can give, it will eventually fail to deliver or break our hearts. You know what we're all looking for? Everybody in here. We're looking to feel valued. We're looking for self-worth. We're looking to feel accepted. It can be summed up this way. Will someone love me? We want to be defined in the dictionary as somebody as those things. I'm accepted. I'm valued. I have self-worth. And what we do is we look to something else that we think can give us this feeling or give us this emotion. We all do it. Can I say this? Pastors do it. This is what we think, okay? In the mind of a pastor. If the church will go to this level, or if this will happen in the church, then I'll get fulfillment. And so this is what I'm going to do. I'm gonna define who I am as a person by what happens in the church. As a communicator, it's very easy to say, I'm going to define me as a person by how well I communicate. Now some of you guys are like, that's laughable because you don't communicate very well. But you know what I'm saying? And sometimes what we do is we define ourselves by all these other things, and often they fail us. The most jolting and crushing thing in life that you will ever experience is losing something that holds you together, or you have come to believe that is holding you together. We've seen how we define ourselves, why it matters. But I want us, third of all, to understand what the gospel says we are. Who the gospel says you are. Who the gospel says I am. Many times we think the gospel's the front door of the Christian life. It's how we get in this thing, and then we start obeying, and then we start doing stuff. But the gospel redefines who we are at our very core. In the gospel, you are now the gospel. The gospel. The gospel says you are not all those other things. You are not about your performance. You are defined by who I say you are. And when you are defined by Jesus, you can finally rest. I just finished a book by a guy named Josh Wright called Breathing Room. He talks about how our lives are stressed, how our lives are busy. And he defines breathing room as the space between our limits and our current pace. So what we do is, let's say our limits are right, I should use this, our limits are right here. Our current pace, we're going all the time, and we're past our limits, and what happens? We have breakdowns. And he talks about breathing room between our limits and the current pace of life. And he says what happens is we have such a small breathing room because what we do is it really resonated with me, is because we let all these other things define who we need to be. Well, I need to be doing this, and I need to have that. And he talks about with kids, and I have no idea about all this. I need to take my kids to Little League field 4 times a night, and they got to be involved in sports, oh, and karate, and they have to get straight A's. And it's like, and then in life, what happens is we are allowing what all these other people think to define us. So because we put emotional weight in that, we're allowing them to control what we do, and we minimize our breathing room, and we break down because we are allowing other people to define us and dictate what we should do. And you know what it does? It leaves us drained. But when you understand what Jesus says about you, it changes things. You know, how many of you guys watch the NBA Finals? Any NBA Finals? Okay, a few of you guys. How many of you guys say, I didn't watch NBA Finals at all, I don't even care about basketball? How many said, I did watch NBA Finals, but because I had to, but I didn't want to? Some of you guys? Okay. You watched NBA Finals. If you didn't, just act like you did. Smile at me, I won't know. You watch a commercial. You can't watch a commercial for like 3 minutes without them telling me that I need to get a new Dodge pickup truck. I used to sell Dodge pickup trucks. Those things are $40,000. But I'm sitting there watching, you know, and they're climbing the hills, and they got the mud coming out, and they're over the rocks, and you got this manly man that comes out, you know. And I'm like, I want to be that. I deserve it. And what happens is... It's incredible how they do it. In a moment, I'm sitting there saying, I want that to define me because I want to feel that way, because those guys feel powerful and strong, significant. So if they feel that way by having a truck, we know how they do it. You know what? I need a truck in my life. But when you understand what Jesus says about you, you can finally rest. You no longer have to play the comparison game and see what everybody else is doing. The amount of likes that you have on your Facebook post isn't that important anymore. Those things don't measure you. Those things don't define you. The gospel doesn't just change you, doesn't just save you, it changes you. In fact, this is what the gospel says you are. It says that you are valued, that you are significant, that you are accepted, and that you are loved. I'm valued, I'm significant, I am accepted, I am loved. Can we say this together? Ready? I am valued, I am significant, I am accepted, I am loved. Now I want you to say it this time like you really mean it. Like you really mean it. Okay, here we go. You ready? I am valued, I am significant, I am accepted, I am loved. This is not just positive thinking. This is a gospel reality in your life. This is not just something where I'm like, yeah, let's think positive this morning, guys. No. This is how God defines you. He says, you are valuable, you are significant, you are accepted, you are loved. Now, can you imagine how much freedom you would experience if every day of your life you lived in those realities? Every single day, you allowed that to define you. Every single day, it wasn't what all these other things tell me I should do. No, this is what defines you. These are not things to pursue. These are promises to claim from God. Maybe this is why Jesus said in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Now, some of you read that verse and you're like, how can that describe the Christian life at all? You're just puzzled. You're like, rest? Come and labor? The Christian life is even more laborious. Maybe if we lived with that reality in mind, it would cause us to rest and we could live with this reality in mind. This entire message could be summed up in one phrase, and this is it. God's affirmation leads to my transformation. God's affirmation leads to my transformation. Can we say it together? Ready? God's affirmation leads to my transformation. Say it one more time. Ready? God's affirmation leads to my transformation. Well, everybody at my age, they're at this place in their life, and I'm just right here, and I feel like I should be at this level, and I can't believe I don't have a relationship. It's not other people's affirmation. It's God's affirmation. This person said this about me, and I'm just going to let you know that nobody talks about me like that, and especially to that person, you don't even know who you're messing with. We're not geared by other people's affirmation. We're not driven by what other people say. We're not driven by what's been done to us. No, no. You know what drives us? God's affirmation. I have to do this. I have to get that because I want this feeling. No. It's God's affirmation that leads to my transformation. If I were to open up God's dictionary, and I were to put, and your name was in God's dictionary, and he were to define you, he wouldn't define you by your accolades. He wouldn't define you by your achievements. He wouldn't define you by your failures. He would define you as loved. He would define you as accepted. He would define you as valuable. Now, some of us, this is what we believe. We don't believe it's God's affirmation that leads to my transformation. We believe it's our transformation that leads to God's affirmation. In other words, once I change and once I start doing good things, then God will affirm me. And once I start reading my Bible, then I'll have God's affirmation. Once I transform, then God will affirm me. Nope, it's not that way. It's God's affirmation in your life that leads to a transformation. And the other way around will just leave us frustrated and burned out. What transformation do you need today? I'm going to suggest three of them. Number one, transformation number one is to start resting and stop performing. Start resting and start performing. Some of us are at the place where we're just tired. We're tapped out emotionally, spiritually, physically, because we've just been performing. We've just been doing. Because the way that God's defined you, you can finally rest. Number two, allow the gospel to define you. Sometimes, and like I said, it's so easy for us to allow good things to define us. But if we don't allow the gospel to define us, we're going to place ourselves in a place we don't want to be. Some of us need to say, I'm going to stop. It's difficult, but I'm going to allow the gospel to define me. I'm going to challenge some of you guys to do this, to take this quote and write it down somewhere. Put on a sticky piece of paper, a sticky note, and put it on your refrigerator, put it on your mirror, put it on the background of your phone, put it somewhere. And whenever you are tempted to define yourself by all these other things, oh, I had a bad day at work. Oh, I messed up. Oh, I did this. You can look at this and say, nope, it's God's affirmation that leads to my transformation. It's not about what I did, how good I did, how bad I did. Nope, it's God's affirmation that leads to my transformation. And this week, your homework, write that down somewhere. Think about it. God's affirmation leads to my transformation. I'm not worried about what people say about me. I'm not even worried about what I say about myself, because sometimes we can be our own worst enemies. It's God's affirmation that leads to my transformation. And I am going to think this week about God's affirmation. Number three, maybe your transformation is to become a Christian because of the affirmation that God has given you. Maybe like Matthew, you allowed all these other things to define you. Maybe there's been some things in your life that have stopped you from being a Christian. They've been obstacles. And maybe you're at a place where you're like, I know I need to take that next step and become a Christian, but there's been all these reasons why I can't. And maybe you've never seen the fact that becoming a Christian isn't an invitation to work and to do all this stuff, but it's an invitation to rest. It's an invitation to allow Jesus to redefine you. Maybe today, that's your next step. In the connection card that was in your service program there, if you mark off, I would like more information about becoming a Christian, somebody will contact you and just connect with you about that and try to help you and show you what that means and help you understand that. Because embracing Jesus is not a call to start working, but it's a call to start resting. This morning, how do you define yourself? How do you define yourself? We all define ourselves in some way. It matters. It's important. But the definition that's going to allow you to have rest and, dare I say, freedom in life is when you allow the gospel to define you. Let's have a word of prayer together.